would say that 99% of what my father has written about his own life is false. That's a quote by L. Ron Hubbard Jr., who happens to be the son of Lafayette Ron Hubbard Jr., who founded Scientology. And we'll talk about that in a little while. Welcome to Dawn's Diorama. It's Sunday, April the 14th, and this week on the show, I'm joined by ex-Scientologist and organiser of Dublin Offline's 2012 conference, Pete Griffiths. We're going to be talking about what Scientology is and is not, and why Pete decided to abandon all allegiances with it to the point of actively devoting his life to campaigning against its practices. The conference received the support of Anonymous internationally, who planned a Chanology mega raid, which actually happened the following day. It was coinciding with this conference, and some people associated with the Anonymous idea actually attended the conference as well. Now, Wikipedia describes Project Chanology, also called Operation Chanology, as a protest movement against the practices of the Church of Scientology by those who associate themselves with the idea that is Anonymous, a leaderless collective that defines itself as ubiquitous. The project was started in response to the Church of Scientology's attempts to remove material from a highly publicised interview with Scientologist Tom Cruise from the internet in January 2008. You can find more about Dublin Offline, Scientology, Pete himself, and the following links, which I will put in the video description, but I will read out a couple just now, so if you want to Google them. www.xscn.ie, and the UK version is xscientologist.co.uk, that's exscientologist.co.uk, and Pete's YouTube is Pedro FCUK. Right, if there's time towards the end of this interview, I'm not sure if there will be, because I have a lot of questions to ask Pete. So I'll open the phone lines, and so we'll see how it goes. But anyway, if you do phone in at the end of the show, if we do have time, you'd be Skyping Bob's backyard or phoning the landline from the UK, 0161-298-0298, or internationally it's 0044-0161-298-0298. Welcome to the show, Pete. How are you?
I'm great, Dawn. How's yourself?
Doing just fine and dandy. I'm really excited to have you on. Okay, first of all, I think we should go right back to the beginning and get your story. Could you tell us how you got to the point of becoming a Scientologist? What drew you towards Scientology initially, and what factors played a part in your decision to abandon Scientology and even to begin protesting actively against it?
Right. A lot of questions there. I got involved, and the strange thing was, like I've always been a big reader, and I read a lot of William Burroughs, and I knew that William Burroughs had been involved with Scientology and turned his back on it. So when my brother and ex-wife start doing it, I was a little suspicious, but because they were doing it and they didn't seem to be taking any harm, I thought, well, okay, how bad can it be? And the one thing about Scientology, and probably every other cult as well, is that even that, like they steamroll you into the cult and they keep you there, but it's yourself and your decisions, like, oh, how bad can it be? You know, that's what actually keeps you in there. So I'm walking past the place and she asked me to go in for a free personality test. I'm already going there to collect my wife, but I make the decision to go in. Then when she's done the test, I don't agree with anything that they say. Anybody who's done one of these tests will know all about it. You're depressed. No, I'm not. You're nervous. No, I'm not. But they eventually find something that hits home, and that's what they use to then sell you the services of Dianetics and Scientology. So they offer that to you. And again, you could turn around and say no and walk out, but they are so good at what they do. Come across as people who are only there to help you, and they tell you that's why they're there. So let's say in my case, I mean, they didn't find any specific thing that was wrecking my life, but the idea that I could improve was appealing to me. That, you know, I mean, and they were selling increased intelligence. The list goes on. It's all in the book Dianetics. Anyone can research that online, the claims of Dianetics. But that seemed appealing to me. So I thought, okay, let's go for it. And I spent like the next month's mortgage money, you know. So that's how quickly they had me spending money I didn't have.
So they basically just coerced you. They found an emotional hook and then coerced you into it.
Totally. But it's my decisions that keep me there. And even when you came across weird things like the clay table stuff where people are making clay models and you go, okay, what's the next thing? Stick pins in? And they go, oh, no, you'll get to that when it's, you know, when it's your turn. And you just, you know, you put things on hold and just keep going forward because you've already set yourself a goal to move towards. But it is very, very clever. But because you're going in there with your eyes wide open, and if you do see something that raises a warning flag, you go, okay, well, I'll deal with that later. My wife's doing this. My brother's doing this. It can't be all bad. These people seem nice and friendly. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
That's the kind of mental state they have you in when you first get involved. That's how I got in. Then a number of years goes by. And it does come down to that very first protest about Scientology that was organized by Anonymous and became Project Chanology. And I didn't question Scientology in all the time I'd left. I just accepted that they were getting on with clearing the planet and making the world a better place. Because that's what the Scientology aims are, for anyone who doesn't know. It's to create a world without insanity, crime, and war. So if you've got goals similar to that, you could align with Scientology. Actually, I think we all want that kind of a world. The Scientologists are different because they claim to have the technology to be able to create that world, and they're the only people who can. Society fails at everything it tries because they don't have Scientology. And they actually believe this. It's incredible when you come across it, when you try and talk to them. But they feel that they have this superior technology, and we're just, well, they've got a name for ordinary people, and it's WOGs, believe it or not.
WOGs. What does that stand WOGs. For? I mean, like, well, you say ordinary people, but what is their actual, is it like an abbreviation or something?
Yeah. Apparently it means worthy oriental gentleman. That's using Hubbard's own words. And he describes that as a common, ordinary garden variety of humanoid.
Humanoid?
Ooh, humanoid. See, we are humanoids, yeah. And in case you don't know this as well, like when you start doing Scientology, you become Homo Novus. So you're no longer Homo Sapien, you're Homo Novus. And you do buy into it. I mean, I can't believe that I bought into this stuff, but I bloody did, you know, because, I mean, a world without crime, insanity, and war, and you can help create it. Yay, let's go. Let's go for it.
Sounds idyllic.
Well, it's beautiful. Really? It's beautiful. And that's what makes the betrayal all the worse, because they're taking those motives of yours to bring good to the world and using you financially, your time as a staff member. That's why the betrayal absolutely really hurts, to think that someone would be so devious to take your purer motives and twist them and use them for money. Because that's what it comes down to. Money, 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 you know?
Yeah, it's very sick. Obviously, like, they're really quite charismatic people. And if you don't really have any knowledge about the background of Scientology or, like, the dangers, if you've not really been exposed to that, then I can see how people can actually fall for it.
Well, back in the day, it was even easier because, like, there was no internet. So the free exchange of information wasn't happening, you know. I was lucky in that I'd read William Burroughs and he walked away, and I knew that. That should have been a warning. But, yeah, I mean, you get yourself in there and, you accept what's going on. It's not okay. You don't believe anything in Scientology. I've got to say this. Scientology says that it's all based on knowledge. It's all about knowing. You don't have to believe anything. You just know. So that, again, is kind of scary because they know they're right, you know.
You mentioned that Scientology is a cult. Now, do you think that any part of it is a religion? Because I do believe, I mean, I've heard that it's registered as a religion. What's your take on that?
Yeah, they're a religion in the United States, and the United States government and Tom Cruise tries to get other countries to make them into a religious entity. My personal view is that it is not a religion. It never was a religion. It started off as self-help therapy. I don't know why he was complaining about paying too much tax, because I don't think he paid any. But the guy basically wanted to try and not have to pay his dues. So he actually held a meeting with lawyers and different people. And there are letters. You can see these letters online that are available, where he wrote to friends asking advice. And basically it was a decision to turn it into a religion. Whether he did or did not say, the only way to make $1 million is start your own religion. There's no evidence that he said that. He's often quoted as saying it. But like, whether he said that or not, he certainly did think that being a religion was the best way to run his operation. And if you look at the history of it all, it's fascinating. It starts off with the publication of one book with a technique in it that people do, and obviously, you know, get some benefit from it, so they repeat doing it and tell their friends, and it starts to grow. All the money starts going to Hubbard, who gives lectures. But like, this book came out in May 1950 with an introduction written by a man called Dr. Joseph A. Winter, and by August of 1950, like 3 months later, Dr. Winter's fallen out with Hubbard, and by October, there's a group of people who are actually against Hubbard. So the first anti-Scientology protesters were just a few months after the publication of the first book, because they saw through it. You know, once they met the man, they could see entirely through what was going on and everything. So.
Right, so yeah, I mean, you get some sort of idea about the founder there, Ron Hubbard. What kind of person do you think he was, and what kind of background did he come from?
Well, he lied about every single aspect of his background. He said his father was a naval officer. His father was in the Navy, yes. He was a purser. I think a purser might be an officer just about, but he wasn't like an admiral or a captain, which is the image that he would like to portray. It's almost like, where do you even begin? I mean, I don't particularly want to attack L. Ron Hubbard, but I don't have a choice. You know, I mean, he lied about that. His father, anyway, was actually only adopted by the Hubbards. He was really a Wilson, so... I don't know, does L. Ron Wilson sound the same to you? Does it have the ring?
It's not the same grunt, has it?
It doesn't, does it? It's a good Scottish name, though. You know?
Yeah.
So, but like, every aspect of his early life was lied about. And actually, he was a member of the Explorers Club in New York, and he wrote a lot of stories for them about his adventures. And only recently did somebody go in there, like just this year, and check on the entries into the log, and discovered that the only people he seemed to have told the truth to were the Explorers Club in New York. So he had something going on with those guys that he had a bit of respect for them. He didn't lie to them like he did everybody else, you know?
So I don't think we've actually really explained or fully what Scientology is yet. And Dianetics, could you maybe elaborate on those for us, please?
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, it starts off with Dianetics, and you've got to sort of accept that you've got a part of your mind called your reactive mind, which goes back to the jungles when you needed to have a reactive mind. So, you know, you're, what's that smell? It smells like jaguar. I'd better run. So this is the premise of the reactive mind, and Hubbard, like in his book Dianetics, says, we don't need this mind anymore. What we need is a mind that's as perfect as a computer, and you've got one. So he goes on to then tell people how, by using his techniques, you can free your you can free yourself of all the upsets, which are what's recorded in your reactive mind, And when you do this, you eventually become, you know, better and better and clear, and you don't get colds and you don't need to wear glasses. And it's all crap because, I mean, so many Scientologists wear glasses, they get colds, and it's like, oh, but he's got answers to that later on because he develops all these different techniques, if you want to call them that, that basically solve every problem known to man. So it kicks off with a simple mental health therapy designed to help, and it develops into Scientology. He claims to have isolated the human spirit as well, which is why it suddenly becomes Scientology. But the Scientology beliefs, quite simply, are that you are an immortal spiritual being that will live forever, and has lived forever, and will continue to live forever. And the only way you can become aware of this is through Scientology and by paying for it. Nothing else works.
That's the, I mean, did that not send any flags to you, the whole having to pay to be a part of it?
Well, it didn't actually, because he explains it all by saying, well, we've got to keep the buildings going, we've got to pay the staff, and we've got to pay the bills, you know, and it costs money to keep this here so that you can gain from it. Now, an interesting thing is whenever you complete a course in Scientology, or if you do processing, which is another name for the auditing, that's the procedure they do, when you finish a series of this, you've got to attest and answer the following question. Would you like other people to have the knowledge and gains that you now have? So if you say yes, you're admitting that you've got some knowledge and gains from it. Even if you haven't, if you say no, you've got to go back and do it all again at your own expense. And that can be quite, you know, problematic. In fact, I know people that they're always attested to everything just because they didn't want to have to redo courses again at their own expense, you know. So
it's designed to punish you no matter what your answer really is. Absolutely.
You can't get away. And then when you've done that, you're asked, would you like to write a success story? Well, of course, the question's innocent. You know, you're being asked to volunteer a success story. But if you don't write one, they want to know why not. So even at that stage, when you've just done your course, they're looking to get you to do your next one. They deny that that you have to do this, but it's absolutely true. When a person completes one course, they have to do the next course. And the introductory courses that a new person does are simply known as routes onto the bridge, because the whole of Scientology is based along this bridge where you supposedly go from where we are now as Homo sapiens to this other state, which is even beyond Homo Novus, you know. It's operating Thetan, where you're totally in control of matter, energy, space, time, thought, form, life, events. You're a god. And you can actually hear Nancy Cartwright, who is the voice of Bart Simpson, actually admit that that's what she wants to be in an interview on, I think that's online somewhere. Nancy Cartwright wants to be a god, should find it. It's incredible. And
It's hidden in plain sight, isn't it, really?
Well, I don't know if you ever saw that awful Batman with Jim Carrey as the Riddler where he says he wants to be a god. I always think of that, you know, in a Bart Simpson voice, you know, because like, whoa. So she wants to be a god. And guess how much she's paid? She's paid about $25 million to try and achieve this godlike status. So good luck, Nancy. Hope you get there.
So you were talking about the bridge. It's the bridge to total freedom. Now,
yeah, that's what they call it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's like a structure of all the different courses you can take in Scientology, right?
Absolutely. And when you're a newcomer and you first walk in and you're having problems with work and they put you on that problems of work course, that's only a step onto the bridge. And they want everybody on that bridge. So, I mean, this whole thing about you're allowed to do a course, then walk away is bullshit. You know, that is a lie. You know?
It sounds rather obsessive compulsive.
That's a good way to put it.
What kind of courses are available on this?
Well, it's absolutely fascinating. Let's take a brand new person. Like, they try and find out what is ruining your life. Now, it could be absolutely anything. It could be an inability to talk to the opposite sex. It could be problems at work. It could be absolutely anything. Just feeling bad about yourself for no reason. And they've got an answer for everything. It's either Dianetics Auditing or a Scientology course, a life improvement course, or an L. Ron Hubbard book. They've got the answers to everything. They think. What you don't find out until much later is that it's crap. You know, the stuff that they're trying to sell you doesn't actually work. Nancy Cartwright obviously must be attaining godhood because she's not speaking out about it. I dare say Tom Cruise must be attaining something as well because he's not speaking out about it. But like for most people who've left that I speak to, it never worked. And yet they kept hanging on for the next course, thinking that it was only happening to them and that maybe it was working for some people. I don't know. And it takes a lot of courage to admit that you spent that money on a scam. Yeah. Basically.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah. Mm. Now, can we talk a bit about Sea Org?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, could you elaborate on what that is?
Well, the Sea Organization runs Scientology. They started off in the 90s. Well, actually, when did they start off? I'm not really too sure. I think it might have been the 60s. But, like, there's a history. If you look at L. Ron Hubbard's history, it was a history of running away. In the early years, it was running away from creditors, and he eventually ended up, he came to Ireland, and he came to England, and eventually bought a manor house in England. He told a lie about that as well. He said he won it in a poker game. Okay, what kind of poker games did he take place in? Okay. It was a lie. He bought it. You know, being, the evidence is there. But he started it in 1967, and he bought a ship. And he sent some. It was an old trawler, as I recall. And he sent some people up to Hull in England to do up this trawler. And then when it was all ready, after a few months, they decided to launch it, and they launched it, and it floated away because someone had forgot to attach a rope. You know, so there's a lot of comedy. Like there's a lot of comedy in this guy's life. But then he bought like an old Irish Sea cattle ferry, and they did that one out, and he ended up with a little flotilla of about three vessels, and the heat was on. I mean, the English government were going to ban him from the UK. They did ban foreign Scientologists coming to England. There were questions asked in the House. There were judges making statements saying that Scientology was corrupt, sinister, and dangerous. And I can't believe we've still got the problem today when people were saying this in the 60s. But we've still got the problem because I tell you, there's one thing they're good at, and that is like hiding. And like, if someone does something bad, you need to prove they've done something bad. Otherwise, they'll just carry on. You know, it's like the whole legal system. You've got to prove the person did what they did. And Scientology is very good at dodging the bullet. And that's what they spent the last 60 years doing, which is why we've still got the problem today. Hubbard did exactly the same thing. Whenever there was a problem, he ran away, which is why the Sea Org was formed. So he goes off to sea and sails around the Mediterranean, and all these stories about the scantily clad pre-adolescent girls is pretty true. One of them who was actually on the ship is now one of my very best friends, and she had an absolute terrible time. The man was an absolute tyrant. He used to lock children in the chain locker if they disobeyed him. I think one kid ate a telex or something, a four-year-old boy, and they locked him in the chain locker. I mean, come on.
Dreadful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And like, this is day and night as well. I mean, he wasn't even allowed out to use the bathroom. I think they threw food in there now and again. But to treat a child like that, and the people who were on there now can't believe that they put up with that. But he was the man, you know, so, I mean, they're not going to go against him. So he started his own private personal navy, you know. He had his own private army, you might say, you know.
It's quite daunting how powerful they are, actually.
Totally.
But it's good that we're able to have this platform to get this information out, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if we were on a ship and it was my ship and you were on the, I don't know, as a follower of mine, let's say, and I ordered you to push a peanut round the deck with your nose, would you do that? Or would you tell me to get lost? You know, he actually did that. He actually did this. And the guy, because it was like a rough deck of a cattle ferry, the guy's nose began to bleed. And there was blood on that deck where the guy was pushing the peanut around the place. So that's just one aspect. The other thing they introduced on those ships in the Mediterranean was a policy, I suppose. It's called overboarding. And what this means is that people that hadn't done well on their studies or people who'd upset him in some way, they basically just picked them up and threw them overboard.
Right? Oh, my goodness.
I'm serious. Yeah, absolutely. And get this, they used to do it first thing in the morning, and he filmed it as well. And then I don't know what he did with the film, so where it's gone. Can you imagine that? Like, he filmed it. The other thing, of course, is people kind of got used to it, and they got thrown over, and they just swam to the shore and got back on board and carried on. So he then started tying their arms and legs before he threw them over.
He just threw them off overboard, and they got back on the ship. That does not compute.
Oh, yeah. No, it does not compute, does it? One guy actually disappeared. I think he used that as his chance to escape.
And he
took a deep breath and then swam. But that's before they started tying arms and legs. I believe as well, John McMaster, who is acknowledged as the first clear in Scientology, and there's another story right there, I believe that he broke his arm when they threw him overboard. Because you had to throw them away from the ship because, like, you know, you can imagine the deck would be quite prominent over most of the ship. But in some cases, the ship itself, the body of the ship would stick out. So you had to throw the person a good distance away from the ship so that they wouldn't hit the ship on the way down. And John McMaster actually broke his arm and he went back for more. Yeah. Oh, my. I believe one chap who was thrown overboard when he was climbing back, he climbed up the steps of the harbour, and I believe there was I think it was a note of some description lying on there, like a $50 bill or something. So he said, "You can throw me over again if that's what's going to happen every time." But that was just a one-off.
What about the rehabilitation project force? Do you know anything?
Okay.
About that?
Well, if you're in the Sea Organization and you screw up, you get sent to the Rehabilitation Project Force. Now, I don't have any experience of that. I have read so many books about people who've been through it, and it sounds like an absolute nightmare. I think people would rather survive the gulags, you know, or Siberia than this RPF. Nancy Manny has written a lot about her experiences. The RPF that she was in was based in the garage of the Fort Harrison Hotel, and she was pregnant. So she was in this place, and she was having to breathe in all these car exhaust fumes. She eventually escaped and wrote a book about her experiences called My Billion-Year Contract. Because let's not forget that the Sea Organization members sign a contract for a billion years, right?
Unbelievable. Who survives that long? That's crazy.
Well, you see, you keep coming back, and because it's going to take more than one lifetime to create a world without crime, insanity, and war, you get the picture?
Yeah.
Oh, my. You know, no, what I was going to mention when I mentioned John McMaster being the first clear is when he wrote his book in 1950, he actually claimed to have actually made clears. And then as he went on giving lectures, he claimed to have made clears and more clears. And then he had a public demonstration of someone who was meant to be a clear, but it actually went very badly against him. And she couldn't even remember what color his tie was or what she'd had for breakfast and stuff like that. So basically people began to leave and walk away slowly, you know, that kind of effect. But he kept on bragging about making clears. There's a video, and I think this is available online, where he admits to having lied in 1950 and previously, and this is in 1958, and he says, well, I have to admit to you, you know, I couldn't make clears back then, but I can now. And then he didn't make clears because the first clear was John McMaster in 1966. So 16 years after the publication of the book Dianetics, he claims to have made the first clear. Then, of course, John McMaster fell foul of Hubbard, like everyone did. He was declared a suppressive person, which means that, you know, you're against Scientology, therefore you don't have the rights of all of other Scientologists. So, basically, that's what you get. You know, I mean, the poor man devoted his life to Hubbard, was the first clear, and then he was declared a suppressive person and kicked out. So,
it sounds like they discourage any form of critical thinking.
You're not allowed to criticize Scientology. They say that if you criticize Scientology, it's because you've got secret crimes against Scientology. And that's why they have a thing called security checking. Oh, one of the things that Clear's meant to have as well is a perfect memory. I don't think Hubbard had a perfect memory because he kept forgetting that he lied. You know that one about a good liar has to have a good memory. Yeah, right.
Absolutely, yeah. So that just proved that he was, inverted commas, human.
He was indeed. He was Homo sapien, yeah. But a very charismatic man, you know, by all accounts. If you watch his lectures, I mean, yeah. You know, you watch it and you go, oh, okay. I mean, I can't listen to myself, but some people can, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll definitely have to check out some more of his stuff.
Oh, do. I mean, there's a very, very short one you can see which shows his racism, which the Scientologists say, I mean, quite simply, he's standing in front of, what do you call those, like a big sheet of paper. What do you call them? You have them in conferences. I can never remember the name of them.
Just like a screen or something.
It's like a big sheet of paper. It's like a
tree. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I can't remember what it's called, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, what are those things called? Anyway, he gets this. He's about to start his lecture and he gets a felt-tip pen, he draws a square and starts colouring it in, and he goes, this is a portrait of a Negro in a coal cellar at midnight. And everyone laughs. And he's just done a black square. And it's like, that is such a racist comment. And the Scientologists defend it by saying, oh, yes, but it was the 1950s and everyone was racist then. And they weren't. I mean, not everybody was racist. And for him to say that and people to laugh, I mean, even today I find that offensive, incredibly offensive. He was also anti-gay, anti-disabled. He was anti-person, basically.
Did he not try to write to, like, the psychiatric board or something to get himself put in?
Yeah, I believe this. If this wasn't pre-Dianetics, it was round about the time he published it. And he tried to interest the American Psychiatric Association in the subject. And they just took one look and went, nah. So began Hubbard's war with psychiatry, which went on all his life. And ironically, when he passed away, he'd been given psychiatric drugs to calm him down. So, I mean, there's a big irony right there. He also requested psychiatric treatment. He wrote a letter in 1947. He was wrote to the Veterans Association because he couldn't afford to continue his medication. So he was actually on psychiatric medication right there. You know, so the guy was a complete contradiction. You know, if he said one thing, you can guarantee he was doing the opposite.
Now, there's been quite a lot of horrific tales about things that have happened to people in Scientology and experiences of obviously like Scientologists talking about them, and also like connected to the hole. Could you maybe elaborate on that?
The hole is a location in Hemet in California. The Scientology International base is built on this old resort that they bought up under a false name. And the hole is apparently two trailers. There's a very good Wikipedia definition on it, actually. And all the executives, the international executives of Scientology, are apparently locked up in this place. Now, it might be different now because they were trying desperately to get the wiki page pulled down, but they failed. The one thing Scientology doesn't want is bad publicity, and it's the only thing they're going to get from here to the end, because people do want to know. You know, when you, I think anybody who stands up and proclaims themselves as one thing and then behaves completely in the opposite, they deserve everything they get. And Scientology is exactly that. Hubbard was that, and the current leader, David Miscavige, is definitely that.
Yeah. I mean, there's reports, people and like ex-Scientologists giving testimonies in courts, like they were in hole, saying that they had bars on the doors and the windows.
Definitely.
Man, it had 24/7 security on the door so that people couldn't actually escape.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I was not in the Sea Organization, but I actually came very close to Sea Organization discipline a few times. Once I was sent down to the headquarters, and I was sent into the basement of the castle at Saint Hill, and had to move a great big pile of rubbish from one side of the place to the other for no other reason than they wanted me to move it from one side to the other. David Love, the Canadian activist, tells the story about how a pregnant girl at one of the Narconon facilities had to shovel snow in the car park from one side to the other. And when she had finished, they said, oh, that's the wrong side. Shovel it to the other side. You know, so, I mean, there is incredible forced labor goes on, but it's used as a form of torture. It isn't. It is not just like random. It seems to be throughout Scientology. I was put to labor. I refused to do it because I was wearing a good suit, so they gave me an old pair of overalls that didn't really fit. But, I mean, you know, I got off lightly. Debbie Cook, who wrote a wonderful email, I think it was in 2010, in New Year's 2010, to something like, she had an email list of about 14,000 names, and she sent this wonderful letter criticizing the current management of Scientology, and she actually did get up in court and speak. She was in the hole, and she apparently was put in a bin with a sign around her neck saying lesbian. And she was taunted and jeered by her peers, who have to join in, because if you're seen to be supporting the person who is now the criminal, then you will be tarred with the same brush. You'll be next.
So they're joining in through intimidation, basically just fear.
Totally, totally. It's schoolyard bullies gone mad. You know, it really is. And it's horrible, you know. I haven't seen too much, so I'm only going from what other people have said. But there's enough stuff out there. Mark Headley, Blown for Good, is another wonderful book. And the book's this. Jenna Miscavige, David Miscavige's niece, wrote her book this year called Beyond Belief. That's an incredible ride, you know, ride and a read. Because she starts off at the age of about 5 or 6 in the Sea Organization. And the Sea Organization, for a child, whoa, that girl went through some stuff, you know.
I can imagine. Now, you did touch on, you mentioned the Narconon. Could you maybe explain to us what that is?
Totally. Scientology has to make itself look good in society. So one of the things they've got is a thing called Narconon. And Narconon is supposedly, according to them, the most successful drug rehabilitation program in the world. Actually, it isn't. It's the worst. There was a study done by a Mexican professor who ascertained at the end of his long study was that if you did nothing, you'd have a better chance of getting off drugs than if you did Narconon. So it's all bullshit. And David Love used to work for them, and he went there with the problem. I hope he wouldn't mind me saying that. When he'd gone through the program, they got him working for them on staff, and it was when he was moved up to the administration side, he could see the facts and the figures, and he's like, hang on a second, they don't have a 76% success rate because such a percentage of people do not complete the course. So many others relapse and go back on drugs within the first year. It just, you know, incredibly, excuse me a second, I got to stop. Sometimes thinking things, it just, you know,
triggers.
Completely fries your bloody head when you think about what they get away with and so on, you know?
Yeah.
But like David discovered that the facts and figures that they were spouting worldwide, and don't forget, like when I was in England, these facts and figures filtered through to me. So I was telling people they've got a 76% success rate. It's rubbish, you know. So David then went to his superiors and said, hang on a second, this isn't a 76% success rate. It's more like 20% or even less. Oh, well, David, you know, and there was reasons why. And David continued to argue and fight with them. So he ended up being kicked out, and he's also a suppressive person. They attack him on a regular basis because they can't be seen to let the critics get away with it, you know. So David is one of the people that's doing a lot of good against Narconon. Now, they've got other stuff going on. In the UK, in the coming weeks, they're going to be going around to schools with an organization called, what is it now? It's not Say No to Drugs. It might be Drug Free World or something like that. I'll have to look up the exact name.
Yeah, you can get us a link and we'll put it in the video description.
I will. The group and whatnot. It's probably Drug Free UK, but it's another Scientology front group. And they're going to go around to schools and they're going to talk to kids about the horrible evilness of drugs. And like the thing about like a lot of Scientology front groups is that a lot of the information is just standard information that you can get from anywhere. But they tend to just add other bits into it, and it then becomes like Scientology literature and makes them look good. Now, interestingly enough, they keep their name off it, but they will get the credit for it, and they take pictures of themselves handing out these leaflets and everything. So people in the UK need to beware. They'll be going around to schools and also visiting police stations and trying to make friends with the local police to get them on board. And it's all to get them on the same side so that Scientology can continue doing what they do safely. They call it safe pointing. That's what they're actually doing. And it's obscene because like it's just not true. Another one they have is called the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, and their aim is to destroy psychiatry. And one of the things they do is like that they publish leaflets attacking psychiatrists and laughing about how psychiatrists come up with all these different mental illnesses that don't really exist. The thing about this, like every other Scientology front group, is there's a germ of truth in some of it, but they leave out the things that we really need to know, you know. So again, you know, you've got all these front groups that they're in education, they're in prisons, they go into prisons, the drug rehabilitation, they've a list of things. Artists for a Better World, that's another one of theirs. I mean, it just goes on. In fact, I think Graham Berry, the lawyer from Los Angeles, once counted the number of front groups, and he got 167. So that's what you're
My
up against.
Goodness. Wow. That's...
I know.
I was going to ask you another couple of things just before we finish, and including, like, obviously, I'll get you to give out some links and whatnot, any information you want people to know about, any final words. Yeah, before we get to that, I wanted to, recently you were at the Tom Cruise premiere, just like there was a protest going on, wasn't there, an anti-Scientology
protest?
We tried to have a protest. Can you tell us what happened here?
Yeah, we were actually prevented from protesting, and it did appear to be a very well-organized operation. The police basically stopped anyone who looked like they were a protester. And in fact, I actually do believe that they had photographs and names already before we began, because they referred to a couple of people, John McGee and Samantha Domingo, and myself, by name. And these are complete strangers. The sinister side, and I'm not going to attack the police because they had the job to do. The sinister side for me was the fact that these people were wearing, like, they weren't wearing uniforms. And we were actually talking to the uniformed guys, and they were fine. But the guys who were not wearing uniforms were just like thugs. And they were just sort of like standing next to you and looking at you. And you'd say, this actually happened. I said to one guy, why are you standing there? What are you doing standing right next to me? And he said, I'm crossing the road. So when the lights changed and he didn't cross the road, I realized that, you know, there was something going on. So what ended up happening is like we split up into like groups, and these guys followed us all over the place. Two guys got chased into a hotel, and basically they were terrified because these were just young fellows, you know, and they had no idea. Like, we didn't know that they were guards, as we call them in Ireland. If they identified themselves, they wouldn't have been undercover, but at least we'd have been able to worry a little bit less because we didn't know who they were. And we're very familiar with Scientology's history about attacking critics. So we were a little concerned. John and Samantha then came a little bit later, and as they arrived, some of these guys were chasing us all over the town and keeping us away from the place. In addition to that, they were searching people's property and confiscating signs, masks, juggling balls, and boxes of chocolates. You know, so there was also a big campaign going on there. The other thing is that John and Samantha finally got to the red carpet. And again, there's a video on YouTube of them being prevented from walking past the cinema wearing T-shirts that say Scientology, Church in inverted commas, Church of Forced Abortions. Because that's one of the other things that we didn't touch on that the Scientology crowd do at the moment. Basically, if you're a female staff member and you get pregnant, you're not helping the world, you know, achieved the Scientology aims, therefore you need to get rid of your unborn child. And that I find absolutely offensive. But anyway,
it's dreadful.
It's shocking, really. So we were prevented from protesting. My concern really is, what is the Irish government doing stopping a legitimate protest so that Tom Cruise can smile and shake hands and promote his crappy movie? I've not seen it myself. Right, I've not seen the movie itself, but I've been told it's bad, so I'm going to believe it.
Yeah. Now, you were harassed yourself by them. I think you lost your phone or something. What happened there?
I was actually attacked by a Scientologist. It was quite incredible. Like, I was taking a picture of Samantha with her T-shirt on, and a Scientologist just happened to be in the shot by coincidence, of course. You know, I had no idea he was in the background. And when he saw me, he came towards me, elbowed the phone out of my hand, stamped on it, and then kicked it under a bus. But there's been a statement made, and there were four witnesses, and that could go to court, so we shall have to see. But that's the first time I've ever been physically attacked by a Scientologist.
Right. Wow. So do you plan to take it any further, or maybe you don't want to?
I don't need to. I don't need to. The police will, you know.
They'll
give him the chance to apologize and compensate me, and if he doesn't do that, they will prosecute him. They've said that, so, you know.
That's good. That kind of takes the weight off your shoulders in that sense.
Another day in court for Scientology as well.
Now, just before we finish up, do you have any... You're welcome to stay on if you want. It's entirely up to you for the next hour.
I think I'd like to.
Awesome. Right, so we will open the phone lines up anyway, but it's a Dark City show, so it'll be the crew. So do you have any final words just to finish up, or any links you want to get out there for the listeners?
I think you mentioned most of the links that we have going. Cheshire Cat said say hi. And I can't go without... Without thanking Shimzoid as well. So
absolutely, you know. Shimzoid's been wonderful in uniting us. Big hi to Cheshire Cat.
Do you know? Shimzoid. All I would say is what was said to me that got me started on this, and that's quite simply is Google Scientology. You know, the information is out there. It's too late to smother the information now. As much as Scientology tries to censor the internet, they will fail.
Thank you very much for coming on the show, Pete.
You're welcome.
It's been such a pleasure to have you on, and you've shared a lot of vital information, and I'd love to have you on again in future at some point. For sure. So we're going to be continuing on with the Dark City show in the next hour. And next week on my show, I'm going to have Ruthann Amartefio. So I'll put out more information about the content of the show through the week. So, once again, thanks for all the listening, and good night.